Well, look what we have. This is getting more and more real for the 49ers in this 2025 season. It's always a fun day when the first unofficial depth chart courtesy the communication staff comes out, because it gives people a chance to debate, friendly debate over football, gives us a chance to cross-reference this with our own depth chart that I keep year-round, and it gives us a chance to talk about who might start for the 49ers, who might make the 53-man roster, who might make the practice squad, and of course, we've got a preview this upcoming game against the Denver Broncos, which will be preceded by a joint practice against the Denver Broncos, who feature five former 49ers, including Dre Greenlaw, Talanoa Hufanga, Mike McGlinchey. Don't forget that. I mean, I wrote an article about Mike McGlinchey's successor with San Francisco. That happens to be Colton McKivitz. And it's a really good one because it ties into a lot of what I do locally. You guys know that I put on for the city. Colton McKivitz, I guess, does too. 4 to 5 times a week in the offseason, he drove up to San Francisco to run some steep hills, specifically the Kearney Street Hill just north of Broadway and Vallejo Street. Both of those are on Telegraph Hill, and the grades there are intense. The Kearney Street Hill is 30.3%. So you could see the headline there on the San Francisco Standard. A 300-pound 49ers lineman ran San Francisco's hills to get into the best shape of his life. Bay Area hills and 49ers players, there's a lore there. Jerry Rice, Edgewood Park, that was the hill. Apparently every single day during his 49ers career, and Jerry Rice is arguably the greatest football player of all time. 49ers have been based in Santa Clara since 1988 and Redwood City before then, so it's been a long time since players lived in the city of San Francisco. You probably have to go all the way back to the Kezar days for that, but the hills all over the Bay Area have been used for training purposes, and Colton McKivitz is now one of the few driving all the way up to the city to take advantage of some of the most famous hills in the world. So I had some fun writing that, but I think that we've got to talk about the 49ers depth chart. I think we've got to talk about D. Winters as well, because you speak of a depth chart. This guy is linebacker 2 on whatever depth chart you look at, whether it is my depth chart here, which we keep track of on Google Sheets. D. Winters is that 49ers weak side linebacker. Here, I could even zoom in on it for you. That's where he's at. Or if it's the 49ers communication staff's depth chart, we've got D. Winters, as you can see right there, at the will linebacker position. He has essentially locked that position up. And today we saw one of the most impressive plays so far of training camp when D. Winters was covering Christian McCaffrey. We know Christian is one of the greatest receivers at the running back position of all time to have ever played the game. We know that linebackers everywhere have struggled to keep up with Christian McCaffrey, which makes him the ultimate matchup nightmare. Well, today they ran Christian McCaffrey on a wheel route out of the backfield, and he sprinted down the sideline, and he's been cooking people over the course of this training camp. Don't get me wrong there. He didn't cook D. Winters on this particular route. D. Winters was with Christian stride for stride, and we already knew that he was going to be linebacker 2 for the 49ers before this, and we've heard some of the comments from 49ers assistant coaches. Johnny Holland, the linebackers coach the other day, said that he wouldn't be surprised if D played over 90% of the snaps for the 49ers this year. So we know exactly where this is headed, but we hadn't seen this kind of display from D. Winters. So, of course, Robert Saleh got to address what happened after practice today. Here's what the 49ers defensive coordinator had to say.
His coverage ability is good, is as good as anybody. You trust him in those situations. You know, you normally with a guy like Christian on the field, you're not going to want to be in a call that puts it back one-on-one, but gave him the op and he won. And with every passing day, he builds more and more trust that he can do that. And the more he shows that he can, it just creates openings for everybody else, especially from a blitz standpoint, where we can send extra people in at their protection, knowing that we have guys all over the place that can handle the different athletes that the league has to offer.
So listen to what Saleh said there at the very end. Because the 49ers have some peace of mind on the back end with D. Winters and other athletes who can cover, Saleh might be able to take some more risks on the front end, might be able to blitz a little bit more often. I think we've already seen some of that here over the course of training camp. They're experimenting right now. Ask Gus Bradley about it the other day. He's Saleh's top lieutenant. He said that Robert's throwing a lot out there to see what his players are good at. Another thing that Saleh said today, which ties right into this depth chart, is that the 49ers may have up to 8 new starters on the defensive side of the ball. So the amount of trial and error that we're seeing right now during training camp, the experimentation is at the highest level that it's been in years. And Robert Saleh has a lot of experience under his belt, both, you know, going from Seattle to Jacksonville to the 49ers to the Jets, now back to the 49ers. He's got a lot of experience under his belt to be able to conduct this in a very exciting and efficient manner. So anyway, without further ado, let's see what the 49ers communication staff came up with on this depth chart. Again, this is not a reflection of what the coaching staff is saying, although the communication staff is in the building. They're watching these practices. And I know that you guys all look at my own depth chart. I obviously am in the building and I watch these practices as well, but it's good to get another set of eyes on it. We can see what the communication staff believes is going to be the pecking order, or at least what is the pecking order at this point in time. They released this because it's part of the, well, I put Robert Saleh up on the screen. I apologize about that. Let's put this. This is the depth chart I was talking about. Didn't realize it was Saleh's face instead. This is my depth chart. This is the 49ers. Communication staff, David Lombardi's depth chart. All right. So they're in the building as well. And they have their approximation of what things look like right now. And I think that it's actually just a very good exercise to go through this position by position so that we can see where some of the disagreements may lie or where some of the battles may lie, where some of the unresolved situations might lie, because the 49ers still have about a month before the start of the regular season. Anyway, 49ers starting offensive line, because I wrote about Colton McKivitz today on the San Francisco Standard. So it's worth talking about that offensive line. He wants to be a Pro Bowler this year. He has said that already. That was about 6 days ago when he was talking to Matt Maiocco. But going from left to right, I think we're all in agreement. Trent Williams, starting left tackle. Ben Bartsch has essentially won that left guard job for the 49ers. Jake Brendel is the center. Dominic Pooney is the right guard. And McKivitz himself is the right tackle. Backup center. Right here, they've got Matt Hennessy listed as the backup center, and they've got Nick Sakel listed as the backup left guard. I think I have it virtually the same on my own depth chart. Yep, Nick Sakel's the backup left guard. Matt Hennessy is the backup center. Sakel is a flex guy, though. By that, we mean that Nick Sakel can play both guard and center for the 49ers. So if Sakel proves that he can back Brendel up at center, maybe that pushes Matt Hennessy out of a roster spot, at least on the 53-man. That's the way that I have it set up on my own depth chart. The 49ers are not projecting a 53-man roster with this depth chart, so it's formatted a little bit differently. But keep an eye out on that Sakel-Hennessy battle at the center position. Then the 49ers, they've got the rookies, Connor Colby and Drew Moss as third stringers. That's essentially what I have. I have them way back here. Drew Moss and I accidentally moved the guy. I've got Connor Colby as a second string right guard just because I think he's going to make the 53-man roster. But second string right guard basically means fourth string guard or number four guard on the team, because that's going to come in behind the left guard position. So don't look at my depth chart and be like, oh, that looks way different than what the 49ers are putting out there. Well, it does, because it's a different format. I'm making a 53-man projection at the same time, and the 49ers depth chart isn't doing that. They're just kind of listing the strings for the 49ers as they are set up right now along the 90-man roster. So they've got Colby and Moss with some work to do. I think at least one of these two guys is going to make the 49ers 53-man roster. Maybe it ends up being Moss. That's why I have him in the same row as Connor Colby. Looking at the top receivers, well, it's Juwan Jennings and Ricky Pearsall. I understand that I'm sure 49ers fans and I'm sure the 49ers would like to see the I'm sure the 49ers would like to see Juwan Jennings back out at practice as soon as possible. There's question about the calf injury, obviously. He's now missed, I believe, 7 straight practices for San Francisco. Kyle Shanahan had the quote that Kyle Shanahan had about Juwan Jennings yesterday when he was asked if it was a business issue, if he was sure that it wasn't a business issue. Kyle Shanahan said, well, check with Juwan. So it was a little bit of a cryptic answer. Either way, Juwan Jennings is one of the 49ers' top 2 receivers. He has earned that distinction. Ricky Pearsall is playing like one of the 49ers' top 2 receivers. I'll tell you what I've seen at practice, and it is every single day we see it at practice. Ricky Pearsall connecting with Brock Purdy, connecting with Mac Jones. The guy has been an absolute stud out there. He looks stronger than he did last year. He's running with some more suddenness, and I think it helps when you've added a little bit of muscle. It also helps when you become so familiar with the system and so familiar with the timing of what your quarterback wants. And remember, Pearsall flew out to Jacksonville to work with Brock Purdy and with Mac Jones and with Carter Bradley this offseason. Well, I'm not sure if he threw with Carter Bradley because Bradley wasn't part of the 49ers yet, but Bradley does work out in Jacksonville with Brock Purdy and Mac Jones. And all this work that Ricky Pearsall was able to put in is showing up on the practice field right now. I mean, there's been insane off-schedule stuff. There's been crazy on-schedule stuff. We talk about the on-schedule stuff. Well, just take the post that opened up practice over this weekend on the very first play. Ricky splits the corner and the safety, makes the catch, and he's off to the races, raising his hand up into the sky. He knew that it was going to be a touchdown from the second that he hauled in that pass, and I'm sure that Brock Purdy knew that it was going to be a score from the second that he threw it. Today, off schedule, Purdy flushed out to his left, had to flip his hips, but didn't really even have time to fully flip his hips. So it was kind of this torque-based sidearm throw where Brock Purdy flipped it out against the grain and it found Ricky Pearsall right down the seam. It is an average of about 4 or 5 catches per practice now over the past few practices for Ricky Pearsall, ever since his snap count has been cleared to go all the way back up to normal. And there's rarely an incompletion whenever Purdy is looking Pearsall's way. So while Juwan Jennings is out, Pearsall is definitely the 49ers' number one. I think DeMarcus Robinson is somebody that San Francisco is looking at as a number 3 wide receiver. Today, Jordan Addison of the Vikings was suspended. He had pled no contest to his DUI issue. That's a 3-game suspension for Jordan Addison. I would expect something similar for DeMarcus Robinson, who also pled no contest to DUI. I get it that the situations were both different, but the league will probably come down on these with, I would assume, a fairly uniform punishment. So if DeMarcus Robinson is not available for week 1, you've got to keep that in mind when you build your 53-man roster. This is what my situation looks like for the 49ers. You know, anybody shaded in that pink means that they are currently dealing with an injury or they are out of practice. Anybody shaded in teal, that's a free agent signee. Anybody shaded in green, that is a rookie. You see a lot of pink here in the receiver room. Because of that, some of these rookies shaded in green, they're going to have bigger roles at the very start. Somebody like Jordan Watkins, who's playing really well for the 49ers. Hey, even Junior Bergen. We're going to find out more when these preseason games start, because that's where Junior Bergen's going to have his true chance to shine as a returner. But he's been making some catches in the pass game for the 49ers. He's got some sneaky escapability, some sneaky separation creating ability for the 49ers. So I think it's worth including his name as we discuss all of these roster machinations. You can see they've got Bergen here in the 3rd string of receivers, DeMarcus Robinson, Jordan Watkins. I agree with this placement higher up at this receiver spot. And you know what else I agree with up here? Jacob Cowing had a great offseason. He's got to come back from the hamstring. We expect that next week ahead of the 49ers Raiders joint practice and game. But Russell Gage has been making catch after catch at 49ers camp. And they're going to want a high floor veteran to fill the back end of the 53-man roster when it comes to the receiving position. And Russell Gage has really carved that niche out for himself so far. And I expect that to continue because he's done it before at this level. He had 2 750-plus yard seasons with the Atlanta Falcons. He's savvy as hell. He knows how to get open. Russell Gage is somebody who, now that he's proven that he's physically capable of hanging on an NFL field following that patellar tendon injury a couple years ago, I think he's proven that he's fast enough to work against NFL athletes again. He's making all these catches at camp. I think that he's got the inside track to get one of those 53-man roster spots, especially given the fact that there's just so much upheaval in that 49ers receiver room. Brandon Ayuk, of course, we haven't even mentioned him, but he won't be back until some point in the regular season. Back to the depth chart. Of course, they've got Juszczyk. Of course, they've got Purdy as a starter. The quarterback room, this is what I've been saying all along. Purdy 1, Jones 2. Told you guys that Mordecai wasn't going to challenge Mac Jones for the number 2. Mordecai has since been cut. It's now Carter Bradley at the number 3 for the 49ers. Oops, that skipped a little bit on us. We got to move over here. It's one of those tricky ones. We have to slide back and forth on the depth chart. Here's your look at the defense. They've got Mykael Williams listed as a starter. Interestingly, he is the only rookie listed as a starter right now. And they've got C.J. West back here, the third team. This is one that I wouldn't agree with. I'd put C.J. West up on the second team. This is where my depth chart differs a little bit, because for the defensive line, I just want to illustrate things with my depth chart. And I want to illustrate that the 49ers, their goal is to be really rookie heavy this year. So you can see here, first team defensive line, I've got Bosa, I've got West, Collins, and Mykael Williams. That is not, and I've said this every time I put this up, I've said this is not actually the pecking order at the moment, but just, you know, this is artistic license for me. This is my way to show this is what the 49ers are aiming for in the construction of this football team. As of right, if I had to make one that was just a pure reflection of what it's like at the moment, it would look a little bit more like the 49ers depth chart, which is right here. But the difference would be that Mykael Williams would still stay in the first team spot, but I would make sure that I had C.J. West and Alfred Collins into a second team spot. And I think the 49ers are going to make that change on this depth chart at some point soon, because Kevin Givens has the pectoral injury. So he's not going to be available until sometime into the regular season. So if you cut Givens out of this picture right now, then it slides everyone a spot up. And you could slide, you know, Jordan Elliott, okay, fine. Defensive tackle, top of the 49ers depth chart. He could be a trade candidate. Who knows? If the 49ers want to open the door to some of these other defensive tackles, who knows what they do with Jordan Elliott. But I get it. He's near the top of the pecking order right now as a veteran. So is somebody like Kevin Givens. I mentioned that Kalia Davis had a nice sack today. He probably is a little bit ahead of where some of these rookies are, just because he's had a little bit more time in the system. But I would urge people to consider that players like Alfred Collins and C.J. West, especially C.J. West, have been charging hard into consideration for more playing time. In fact, I would say that they've done, especially West, has done everything in his power so far in practice to show that he's a contender for playing time, to the point where he's done, he can't do anything else in practice. Now comes the big test, the preseason games. How well does he tackle? How well does he handle real game situations? Do you line him up over center at the one technique? Do you slide him over to a three technique position? Same questions for Alfred Collins, who I think is making progress. I talk about the leverage as a tall defensive lineman that he has to work on. These preseason games and this practice against the Denver Broncos coming up on Thursday is going to be the first firm outside measuring stick that the 49ers have for this rookie class. As you can see the depth chart here, it's tricky. Where do you put Bryce Huff? Because he's not going to be an every down guy. If you're talking about a nickel package, pass rushing package, of course, Huff is going to be one of the 49ers top four. But that's when you start kicking Mykael Williams inside. Bryce Huff takes over the edge rushing spot. Nick Bosa's on the opposite edge. You figure all those things out as you go. The depth chart is not necessarily going to accurately reflect them. You've got Huff on one of the edges here in the second team, and Sam Okwuonu is currently out of practice right now, but he should be back soon for the 49ers. He's on the other edge. Then they've got Robert Beal, Jonathan Garvin, Jalen Allen, and Bradley Anae buried on this depth chart. And that essentially matches what our approximation had been. A lot of these guys are in there to help the 49ers get through training camp. I just think that C.J. West is going to find himself higher up this pecking order as preseason progresses, as he has a chance to prove himself. As you can see, the three linebackers, I mentioned Warner, and then Winters is 49ers linebacker number two. The third one still is Luke Gifford here. And this is where the preseason games might give somebody a chance to move up the pecking order. Is it Nick Martin, the rookie, who's going to have an opportunity to play in an actual game now? Is it going to be Tatum Bethune, second-year man out of Florida State? Curtis Robinson's coming off the torn ACL. He was playing really well last year before he tore his ACL, so we can't forget about him. Stone Blanton, another rookie out of Mississippi State. Chaz Surratt, who had the loudest thump, the very loudest thump of 49ers practice just yesterday. We know that Robert Saleh really liked Chaz Surratt back in New York with the Jets, the former quarterback in college, crazy position transition. Can some of these guys make flashes, make plays over the course of these preseason games, these joint practices, to challenge somebody like Luke Gifford? Gifford is going to be your high floor guy at that third linebacker position. Now, this is only a position that is going to see action about 30% of the time, but because the nickel package is more prevalent in football these days, but it still is an important position, especially if you're trying to knock on the door of linebacker two in the event that either Dre Greenlaw or D. Winters gets hurt. There you can see I match the 49ers approximation. I've got Gifford in there next to D. Winters. All right, next we can look to see what the 49ers have in mind, their communication staff at least, at the defensive back position. And this also does match what we've been talking about. Lenore Renardo Green on the outside. Renardo was running off on the side today. It's good for the 49ers. He should be back next week. Lenore was back today at a nice pass breakup with George Kittle in coverage. And then, of course, you've got Trey Brown right here. They've got Trey Brown leading at the nickelback competition. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think Upton Stout has grabbed that lead. I think this is something that's going to change over the course of the coming days on this unofficial depth chart. I agree with where they have the safeties right now, given the fact that Malik Mustafa is on the PUP list. They've got Jason Pinnock and Jair Brown. The question is, if everybody stays healthy and Mustafa comes back, what happens when that's the case? Does Jair Brown get knocked out of a spot? Does Jason Pinnock get knocked out of a spot? And then, of course, Marquise Siegel will be competing. He is maybe the fastest out of all those safeties. He'll be competing, trying to find a spot on the first team. Don't scoff at it. It's something that Malik Mustafa was able to do last year. It took him a few weeks, but they eventually did get there in the 2024 season. Mustafa became a starter and the rest was history, right? That was big for the 49ers. Yeah, let's take a look at some of the specialists too. This is always interesting. See what the comms department thinks about the specialists. Isaac Garendo is not going to be available here for a few weeks, but they have him as one of the kick returners. They also have Patrick Taylor Jr., Junior Bergen, and Dallas Flowers. That matches what I was saying in the instant reaction today. They've got Cowing, Junior Bergen, and Jordan Watkins as the 49ers punt returners. So if you have any questions about this roster, the guys that we thought were more just like camp bodies, names to fill out the roster, they all seem to be in these third and fourth columns. So I don't think there's any controversy there. I think some people might be up in arms about Trey Brown ahead of Upton Stout. But again, this is unofficial, and I think a lot of this stuff will work itself out over time. You just have to watch these preseason games, and then the communication department will update its depth chart as these weeks progress. But Upton Stout has been the biggest surge for the 49ers recently. D. Winters, that stock has risen as well. I think the 49ers had an idea entering training camp that this would be their number two. I think the fans just weren't as convinced yet because they hadn't seen all too long of a stretch of D healthy. And he's going to have to prove that over the course of this 2025 season. But so far, he has looked fantastic out on that field. I mean, I should get my notes out. We should talk a little bit about practice today. But one of the highlight plays definitely was D. Winters sprinting down that sideline, catching Christian McCaffrey and making sure that that deep throw to McCaffrey, that deep attempt, was incomplete. I've got some news right now. We are three subscribers away from 90K. We have a little announcement to make, because I'm sure it's going to happen here within the next few seconds. 90K real subscribers. No fake subscribers bought and paid for. It really essentially the first 49ers reporters channel to reach this milestone. I mean, I could tell you right now, we are at 89,999. We are one away from 90,000 real subscribers, like organic growth, and we have officially done it, 90,001. So over the course of the past 10 seconds, we have crossed the $90,000 threshold, or the 90,000 subscriber threshold. Sorry, didn't mean to invoke money there. The 90,000 subscriber threshold has been crossed. Thank you, everyone. It has been a tremendous journey here on YouTube. We break the 49ers down in more depth than any other source, especially in video form. And it has been my journey to grow alongside this channel while you've all been watching here over the past few years. A lot of this began, I think, in 2021, but I was just wandering through the hallway at Jerry World, AT&T Stadium in Dallas, before the 49ers played and beat the Cowboys in the wild card round of that season's playoffs. So it was technically January of 2022. And I'm on my way from the field up to the press box for kickoff when all of a sudden the 49ers locker room door swings open and out they come, Deebo Samuel, Trent Williams and company with the boom box. And I'm like, well, I think the fans would like to see this. This is really neat. There were really no TV cameras right there at the time. And I'm like, why don't we film this? And I just walked with Trent Williams and Deebo Samuel down the hallway and I filmed the 49ers coming out with the boombox. And they went out on to beat the Cowboys. And I put up the video and, you know, it. I don't know how many views is that, Mike. I think it's got close to a million views at this point. And at that point, I'm like, well, this is a good way to really convey what the 49ers are all about to the fans, like through that visual medium. The very next week, 49ers are playing at Lambeau Field. It's snowing. They win in one of the most epic ways imaginable. Robbie Gould nails the field goal as time expires. It's negative 15 degrees outside. I was still working for The Athletic at the time, and I'm writing in the press box. And I look up when I file my article, the Snow Globe article. I'm the last person in all of Lambeau Field. So I'm like, well, gosh, it's probably midnight back on the West Coast. It's 2 a.m. Central time in Green Bay. I didn't have any of the camera equipment and microphones I did now. I just had my iPhone and maybe a tripod. I don't even remember if I had the I don't even think I had the iPhone and the tripod to film. I think I just used my FaceTime camera on my laptop and I set it up on the top row of the press box and I had it pointed downward and I was standing on the bottom row of the press box and I was the last person in all of Lambeau Field. And we did a live show for over an hour with the snow behind us on the field at Lambeau. And then I almost died going out to my car because it was negative 20 degrees and you're slipping and sliding everywhere. And it was sketchy, but we did the show. And it was like in those early days covering the 49ers through YouTube, that was already my fourth or fifth season covering the Niners in general. But in those early days covering those videos, like some of you like established yourselves as OGs, OG followers of the channel, and it's grown into what it is now. We're going to be the first 100,000 real subscribers as well. And I just want to thank everybody for the journey because it wouldn't have been possible without those of you showing up and given your good questions, obviously watching, and now every single video that we put out there is absolutely blowing up. So really do appreciate you guys. Thank you for subscribing. Please do subscribe and hit that alarm bell notification right now if you have not already done that. Subscribe, alarm bell notification. That way you know whenever we come live with a helmet update, a reaction, breaking news, whatever. Or if I just want to talk about one of my articles up on the San Francisco Standard, or if I want to talk about a depth chart, you'll know when I'm live. So those are all ways that you can support this channel. Also, support the San Francisco Standard. That's who I write for now. They've been awesome. We're coming up on a year and we've got Colton McKivitz running the hills of San Francisco as our featured story today. And this is the most in-depth 49ers written coverage that you're going to get anywhere. All right. This is a good time for some questions about the depth chart. So I am ready to answer them. In Sala's system, is there a difference between the free safety and the strong safety, or are they interchangeable? Back when Robert Sala was the defensive coordinator the first time, they tried to make these depth charts safety as interchangeable as possible. The position, you want to have one guy able to slide down and support against the run, the other guy play up high to be your single high safety. But you also, in an event of a defensive rotation, want the single high guy to be able to come up and play the run and vice versa. Of course, different safeties are going to have different strengths as part of their skill sets. But in general, the 49ers really, really want the interchangeability at that safety position. All right, let's get some good questions. We've got somebody who's subscribed under 1,000 subscribers. So here we are, 89,000 subscribers later. We still got the OGs in the house. I love that. This is a good question from Samuel. Do you think that Gus Bradley will take over as defensive coordinator once Sala leaves? Definitely a possibility. I mean, Gus has done it before at a high level. This is the original DC of the Legion of Boom back in 2012. He's been a head coach, too. I mean, it all depends on how things evolve. Does Sala leave after 1 year? Does he leave after two? We have no idea of knowing. Does Gus get offered a job? Does Sala want to bring Gus Bradley as his defensive coordinator if Robert Sala gets a new head coaching job? Does KJ Wright, who I think is a rising coaching star, somebody like that, does he put himself into a similar position as a D'Amico Ryans because D'Amico was ready to succeed Robert when he last left? I mean, those are all questions that are still waiting to be answered, but it is a good question. Bosa is not hurt. No, do not let anybody alarm you. I saw Nick out there today. Well, not in uniform, but he was running pass rushing moves before practice during the warm-up period before he walked over into the weight room. He was a little sore a couple days ago after practice, and they are preserving Nick Bosa and his body for this joint practice is going to be a big deal on Thursday against the Broncos. But no, Nick is not hurt for the 49ers. No, Nick Bosa is not hurt. Only on the YouTube comment section, Twitter is probably like this. Can I say Nick Bosa is not hurt? He's just sore, guys. And somebody will respond, well, he's hurt then. No, he's not. They manage players, especially their superstars, at this juncture of the year. You've got to get the goal right now is to get your roster ready for, what is it, September 7th? September 7th at Seattle. That's the goal. Get your roster ready for September 7th. Who cares about a practice on August 5th for Nick Bosa? If he's a little sore, give him that rest. Now, August 7th against the Broncos, the joint practice, you might have something more to gain from that practice. So that's the one that you probably would like to see Nick Bosa out there for. As Eric says, load management. Yes, we often talk about that in the NBA, but I think we're going to be talking about that a lot more in the NFL. They're getting much more scientific with their snap counts right now. Are the starters playing week one? I don't think so. Normally, Shanahan runs the dress rehearsal in week three, which means that week two is when the starters see a series or maybe two max. And week one is when the starters, the main superstars, are not going to dress for the 49ers. Some starters will because they have to get through the game. You have to have enough guys suited up, but I don't think that you're going to see Purdy and McCaffrey and company on Saturday against the Broncos. You will see them on Thursday in the joint practice with Denver. Whose birthday is it going to be? Is it going to be your birthday, Joy? When? Saturday? Happy birthday to you. I just don't know how. What day exactly it is, because I can't really keep up with how fast this chat is moving. What are the 49ers most looking forward to seeing most of the Broncos. Well, Denver had the best defense in the league last year. Like, if you looked at EPA, DVOA, the advanced metrics, Denver ranked as the very, very top defense in the NFL. So, that to me, that's awesome. It's a chance to face the reigning top defense in the NFL. They also run a 3-4. So it's a three-man front instead of a 4-3. So the 49ers offense will get a different look. There are a lot of old friends on the Broncos. DJ Jones, Dre Greenlaw, Talanoa Hufanga. That's just the name three. Mike McGlinchey, Trent Sherfield on the other side of the ball. So you get to see your old friends. You get to play against a really good defense that presents a different challenge, a different front than the one that the 49ers defense is challenging its own offense with. And then you've got an exciting young quarterback on the other side in Bo Nix. There have been comparisons between Brock Purdy and Bo Nix. And, you know, Bo, you know, Margot went to Auburn. He went to Auburn. Then he went to Oregon. So he's an Oregon Duck, just like D'Amador Lenore. But I thought Bo did a really good job last year. He grew on the job. And so we're going to get to see how Bo Nix looks in 2025. He's working with a good coach in Sean Payton. Payton has always been one of those coaches who schematically strains an opposing defense, right? Shanahan might be at the top of that. Sean Payton, really good too. Sean Payton steals plays from Kyle Shanahan. Kyle Shanahan steals plays from Sean Payton. It happens both ways. They were going against each other back in 2019, the epic Jimmy G multiple touchdown, 400 plus yard game against Drew Brees, right? In the Superdome, 48-46 49ers. And they were both going back and forth with insane play calls. And it was just fun. So both of these guys are amongst the leaders as far as play callers in the NFL. And it's going to be great to see Peyton's defense get the practice against Peyton's offense practice against Robert Saleh's defense. And then it's going to be great to see Kyle Shanahan's offense and Brock Purdy work against what was the number one defense in the league last season. I think this is going to be a very competitive practice on Thursday, and I can't wait. Rebecca wants to be able to go to the practice on the 7th and wants to see DJ Jones, Dre, and Hufanga. I think that's going to be headline material. I'm fired up. I really am fired up. And we get two separate joint practices this year. Not two sessions with the Broncos. We get one to cover 49ers Broncos, and we get one to cover 49ers Raiders the following week. More good questions. Let's go for it here. Isaac asks, is Mac Jones a long-term number two? I think Mac still would like to be a number one at some point. I think he'll have one more shot probably if he rehabs his way properly with the 49ers. It's the QB rehab program, right? He's got 2 years under contract. But I think, you know, somebody was picked in the first round who saw some success already as number one, his first season with New England, who is working in a system that has been able to promote number twos to number ones, most recently with Sam Darnold. If I'm Mac Jones, I still have aspirations to be a number one, but maybe he'll settle into a long-term number two, but maybe that won't come until another number one opportunity, right? So we'll see with Mac, but it's always a good thing to have a capable number two QB. Mac today went 14 of 15 at practice. And he went 14 of his first 14. Didn't miss until the very final throw of practice today. So I think that he runs the system the way Kyle Shanahan wants the system to be run. A big question will pop up when the pass rush is live against Mac Jones. That's absolutely something that he's going to have to prove that he can deal with. I think that's something that's derailed him in the past. And if he can handle the NFL-style pressure, the NFL-style physicality, and still execute Kyle Shanahan's offense, he's probably going to get a number one opportunity somewhere else. maybe not next year, but in 2 years. He's under contract with San Francisco for two seasons. But if he plays well this year, if he has some opportunity to play well this year and the stock rises enough, he'd be excellent trade material for the 49ers in 2026. That is what Papa Jay asks. And that I was able to answer that before you even asked it, but I guess I'll just put your question up on the screen anyway. Is there any concern if Jennings is out for weeks? Yes. I mean, Juwan's a good receiver, and this receiver room went through hell last year when it came to the injury depletion that it was fighting through, when it came to just that was obviously really tied to the separation problems the 49ers had. Juwan stepped up and put up a big year, and he can also block really well. I think he embodies a lot of what the 49ers are all about. So anytime a player like that, who I think we consider him a glue piece, even if he's not an A-list a pillar of the team, I consider Juwan Jennings a glue piece. Whenever a piece like that is out, I consider it concerning. And I think Juwan, you know, when you look at his style of play, the fact that he was able to fill in at the X for Ricky Pearsall, the Z for Deebo Samuel, he put up the Jerry Rice-like game when he was at the Z filling in for Deebo. That was in week 3 in LA. And the fact that he's been the number 3 wide receiver essentially throughout his entire starting tenure with the 49ers, his ability to contribute wherever he's needed on the field, his ability to block, get under opponent's skin, all that stuff is really important to a football team. So the 49ers want him out there as quickly as possible. Armando asks, do I think Colton McKivitz will make a big jump this year? He lost weight, better shape. How's he looking? Glad that you asked, because I wrote about this on the San Francisco Standard. So let's get into this. Here's the headline. A 300-pound 49ers lineman ran San Francisco's hills to get into the best shape of his life. McKivitz lost fat, gained 8 pounds of muscle because he was busy running Kearney Street between Broadway and Vallejo, and he was busy running Vallejo Street up Telegraph Hill. They're not the two steepest streets in San Francisco. I got some trivia for you guys, actually. Kearney between Broadway and Vallejo is a 30.3% grade. It's pretty damn steep, right? 30.3%. But the steepest street in San Francisco is called Bradford Street. It's in Bernal Heights. It's a 41% grade. That one is even steeper than anything else in the U.S., and it might be the steepest street in the world, although there's a debate. There's something in Central or South America that may be steeper, but it hasn't been verified. Funny enough, the last time Colton McKivitz did something public from San Francisco before all these runs, he was doing the tractor, the John Deere tractor commercial with Brock Purdy. That was on Bernal Heights. That's where the 41% grade is. That's where Bradford Street is. This offseason, Colton McKivitz traveled up to San Francisco 4 to 5 times a week, and he didn't bring his tractor this time. He was sprinting uphill. So here's this West Virginia guy who is sprinting up hills, doing broad jumps up the 30.3% grade of Kearney Street with a glorious view. I'll go do a video from there. If you guys want me to do a video from this spot, give me a thumbs up. He's doing this crazy work that has allowed him to pack on 8 pounds of muscle, lose weight. He's in the best shape of his life. McKivitz made a massive stride already last season, which he deserves a lot of credit for. He went from the 4th percentile to the 56th percentile. So he went from near the bottom of the league to above average in pass blocking efficiency from 2023 to 2024. He has already come out and said, I will be a Pro Bowler this year. Is that a lofty goal? Sure. But if he improves at just half the rate that he improved last year from 2023 to 2024, he's going to be in the very upper echelon of tackles, especially right tackles, when it comes to pass blocking efficiency. And you could talk about Colton McKivitz as a potential Pro Bowler. People will say that sounds insane, but I also think that people are insane in the way that they've treated Colton McKivitz on social media. He might have been a very below average pass blocker in 2023, but that doesn't mean the players cannot improve. And he improved. He developed big time in 2024. He was above average, and you got to give it to him. If he continues working and getting better in the way that he showed that he can get better from 2023 to 2024, he's got a shot to be a true household name around the NFL. Remember, this is also a contract year for Colton McKivitz. He's set to make only about $4 million this year. He's going to sign for way more next offseason. That's another. Kyle Shanahan has acknowledged that the guy deserves a contract adjustment. Now, whether or not it's possible for the 49ers and McKivitz to find middle ground right now remains to be seen. I think the prospect of free agency next offseason for Colton McKivitz is a very, very potentially lucrative one. So I don't know if he wants to sign something right now that gives the 49ers more team control, because I think hitting free agency could be very valuable for Colton next offseason. I mean, just take it this way. His backup, Jalen Moore, signed for $15 million annually with Kansas City. Colton's set to bring in between $4 and $5 million this year, and he's better than Jalen Moore. So he's in line for a big payday. And if the 49ers are going to secure his services for the future beyond this season, they're really going to have to pony up for it. Now, there is a world, and I was talking to Mike about this before we went on air, there is a world in which the 49ers say, okay, well, Trent Williams has a couple years left, 3 years, he says, to Tim Kawakami, works for us as a standard. Maybe the 49ers decide, okay, we want to make a big tackle investment that's not Trent, financial tackle investment, since Trent will at some point be coming off the books. Maybe Colton McKivitz proves himself to such a great extent this season. Maybe he makes another big surge to where Colton McKivitz is the guy who gets that money for the 49ers in 2026, right before he hits free agency. But I don't think the 49ers are quite ready to fork over that kind of commitment yet, because A, they're not sure exactly how much longer Trent Williams is going to go. Trent's probably not 100% sure. He hopes to go three more years. That's what he said, to 40, age 40, right? But B, they haven't seen Colton McKivitz in 2025 game action yet. So there are, you know, a lot of things that will go into how the 49ers decide this. And I think a lot of those variables are just empty right now. That's the problem. They're just X, Y variables. There's not a number plugged in yet. And 49ers need to plug in some numbers. That's going to happen as this 2025 season progresses. Am I excited for Guy Haberman? Of course, I'm excited for Guy Haberman. He'll be announcing the 49ers preseason games on television over the course. So congratulations to Guy. He's been on the show before. And he will that's filling in for Greg Papa. Greg texted us yesterday during the show. That's awesome. He said that we have some viewers at the hospital on the nursing staff at the hospital. They like watching the YouTube show, which is awesome to hear. So if Greg texts me back right now, I just texted him back before the show. I said, hey, does anybody want a shout out at the hospital besides Greg himself? We're giving Greg another shout out. We love Greg. But if anybody wants a shout out at the hospital where Greg is at, please do let me know. And Greg will let me know, and we'll give him that shout out. He's in good hands. We know that. So we are waiting for more good questions. As I just look through here, there's a lot of comments, which I love. But there's a lot of get well wishes for Greg Papa, which is really good as well. First unofficial depth chart is out. It does seem to be very close to what I have kept up there. And I keep this depth chart current throughout the course of the entire calendar year. There might be one change I actually have to make to it right now, and I could do that right in front of you guys. Andy Isabella cut. Equanimeous St. Brown is back. and I can change the highlight because he's healthy to this. You know, I explained it a little bit earlier today, and I'll explain it again. NFL teams, any NFL team, doesn't matter who you are, needs over 100 players to get through a training camp. However, only 90 players can fit on a roster at any given time, which means you're going to have situations like the one that the 49ers just encountered with Ekwonemi St. Brown. You'll sign him for depth. You'll cut him when something else happens, and then you'll re-sign him when yet something else happens. It's going to be a constant shuffle with some guys. You have to consider players who are not currently on the team but also not signed with anyone else as extended versions of your football team, guys who might get a call at any time to spring into action. Today, the 49ers were warming up, and Ekwonemi St. Brown wasn't with the receivers during the early part of practice because he was still finishing stretching. He probably got the call either early this morning or late last night, but wasn't able to fly in until right before practice today. And he showed up and was still stretching when the 49ers were getting going. So he actually missed a tiny bit of the start of practice. It was funny. I was looking for him when the receivers were running their warm-up drills. But then he was in there during the team drills. He's familiar with the playbook. He was here, a week ago? Just how the NFL works, how the 49ers have to operate this roster depth over this portion of training camp. Keenan Allen re-signed with the Chargers today. You know, a lot of people, why don't they sign Keenan Allen instead of Ekwonemi St. Brown? It's like, they're not looking for a top starting receiver right now. That's not on the 49ers list of needs at the moment. They actually, once September rolls around, they should be in decent shape there. They, with the way Ricky Pearsall's playing, Jacob Cowing should be back for the 49ers. Even if DeMarcus Robinson is suspended, they obviously do need to take care of this Juwan Jennings situation, or that calf needs to heal, or whatever needs to happen there. But they'll be fine along the front line of that receiver room. Jordan Watkins is doing some good stuff over the course of this training camp. What they need are bodies to get through this training camp, so that way you don't see the domino effect of everybody's snap counts getting too crazy. So they're not looking for the number one right now. They're looking for receiver depth, and they're not going to pay $8.52 million for it. They're going to pay a non-guaranteed league minimum for it. That's what they paid Ekwonemi St. Brown. Keenan Allen signed for $8.52 million with the Chargers. So a reunion with LA, or as we should maybe say, San Diego for Keenan Allen. People overreact way too much to back of the roster signings, and they try to equate them with top end signings, and they don't understand that those two things are complete apples and oranges. And they also don't understand that the 49ers are looking at this in a longer term lens. They're not panicking right now with injuries and unavailability in the receiver room as if they have a game, like a regular season game, in 2 days. That they don't. So they shouldn't panic. You don't just sign somebody so you're stronger for an August 7th game. You have to look at this roster in the big picture, and you also have to look in the salary cap picture in the big picture, because you're paying Brock Purdy, you're paying George Kittle, you're paying Fred Warner. The salary cap is something that has to be carefully managed year over year. What do I like about Stout? Oh, he's a complete dog. How do you not like Upton Stout? We have a lot of Upton Stout content up, so go check out the video from this morning. Go check out the video from when I drove all the way up to Western Kentucky and I interviewed his head coach in college, Tyson Helton. That's one of the good pieces I was able to do for this channel over the course of the offseason. We get into everything Upton Stout in those videos. Well, this isn't completely true. 49ers have made it very clear they won't spend money on free agents this year. They spent some money. They didn't spend a whole lot, but they spent money on their own guys. They doubled down on some of the A-list players on this football team. And that, to me, the fact that they're still top five in annual spend, cash spend this year, that to me just shows you that the structure of this roster, the philosophy of the front office. But no, they're not just going to go buy aging players to fill into random roles. That's not going to make this team younger, faster, hungrier, and healthier. And what they're going to do is look at this in the big picture, be patient, realize that Juwan Jennings That'll sort itself out. You've got to obviously work on it, but it'll sort itself out. Brandon Ayuk is going to be back at some point. There's a lot of people going for these Band-Aid quick fixes and unrealistic maneuvers online, but it's just not a really smart way to look at how the 49ers are operating. So do I think that the 49ers tend to put rookies lower on the first depth chart because they're rookies? Absolutely. And because they're rookies, they're also getting a little bit more practice time with the second and third team units out on the practice field. Like, they're not just throwing them out to the wolves to go with the ones. So the veterans, guys like, let's say, Kevin Givens up until he got hurt, Jordan Elliott right now, those are the guys playing with the ones. Alfred Collins and CJ West, they're going to have to earn their way into that mix. It's going to take a little bit of time. They have a chance to flash in these preseason games. So when the communications department makes its depth chart, which just came out for the first time today, the first unofficial depth chart, here it is, they're going to reflect what they see out on that practice field. And that's been Alfred Collins and CJ West, not yet on the first team. This is stuff that I've reported during the helmet updates after every practice. So when I make my 53-man roster projection depth chart, it's a little bit different. It's a different format because I'm projecting who's going to make that cut and who isn't. That's why I put the rookies over on this side, because I'm showing you what the 49ers have, what their strategy, what their vision is in the future. We got a really, really good piece of intel from Robert Sala on this year's rookie class. Have it listen to Robert Sala speaking today.
Love this rookie class. They're all attacking every moment. You know, I know Fred spoke pretty candidly about Upton Stout. He's doing a hell of a job. Alfred's been getting better every day, getting his legs underneath him, showing some really good progress in the run game. CJ's been showing good stuff in the run game. Michael, obviously, it's hard to see in there, but his pass rush on the inside has been fantastic. And even Siegel, safety, is coming along really strong and doing a really nice job. So just overall as a group, they're getting better. They're competing, you know, going against a really, really precise offense. Our offense has been rolling out for 8 years, and so the precision at which they operate is pretty damn good. So they're getting all they're getting all they can handle as rookies. It's as hard as it's going to get for them going against our offense and all the different things they do. But they're showing that it's not too big for them.
They're showing that it's not too big for them. They're excited about this rookie class. In the larger picture, it is imperative that the 49ers hit on both 2024 and 2025 in the NFL draft. Just given the way that the past few years have gone with the Trey Lance trade and obviously the loss of draft capital there, some of the 49ers drafting failures in the upper rounds, the general construction of the roster, which got really top heavy by 2024. Just given the way that everything has gone, it was very clear from a salary cap perspective, the 49ers would have to clean out some of the weeds, right? And they would have to focus on their A-list pillars, which they did with who they paid this offseason, but they would have to get, and last offseason with Trent and CMC, but they would have to get good rookie production in both the 2024 draft and the 2025 draft to fill the margins of the roster and the meat of the roster even out on a cost-controlled basis. That had to happen. And 2024, first returns were very good. That was a good draft class. It was one of the silver linings of the 6-11 season. Now we're sitting here saying, how is 2025 going to look? Early returns through practice are good. You just heard from Robert Sala. You just saw the 49ers' first unofficial depth chart. You've been looking at my depth chart over the course of the past several months. We get to see the Broncos and the 49ers at practice, and then we get to see the first preseason game. Buckle up. This is going to be a lot of fun. The next step in that journey is here. We are at 90,010 subscribers, so we have crossed 90,000 real subscribers on this show. First 49ers channel, first 49ers reporters channel to cross 90,000 subs, like real subs, legitimate subs. Like, that's awesome. We're 10,000 away from 100,000. So hit that subscribe button right now. If you haven't, hit the alarm bell notification. If you're watching on Twitter, which you might be, go to YouTube. and subscribe there and check out the San Francisco Standard as well. Really appreciate it. This show is a celebration of sorts. You guys are awesome. We'll talk to you soon.